Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents When She Dances by Ruby Dixon. Narrated by Jillian Macy and Mason Lloyd. 1. Tessa. Sometimes when I'm dancing, I fantasize about a different life. I don't dream of Earth or returning home. That's too unrealistic, even for me. So I fantasize about different things. I dream that some hero is going to storm into the cantina, demand to buy me from Abuar, unhook the chain at my ankle, and then carry me away from here. Heck, in my fantasies, we even leave Three Nebulas Station. We leave the crowded, humid halls, the dark rooms, and slightly run-down apartments. We leave behind the taste of recycled air and the constant whir of engines, and we go someplace new, someplace with sunshine and light, and the air is fresh and clean. These are the things I dream about. It's those dreams that carry me through another day of the same irritating music that drones on and on. Songs that I grew tired of dancing to months ago. It's the dreams that keep me going when yet another alien customer shows up at the edge of my stage and tries to grab me. I kick away one of the tentacles and point at the sign that's been installed at the edge of the stage. I can't read it, but it's written in several alien dialects and tells customers not to touch me, that I bruise easily, and anyone that bruises me will be fined. That part is certainly true. I do bruise easily, always have. It's genetics. And because my skin is so pale from being inside the cantina, those bruises show up livid against my skin. It's why I dance in the window of the cantina instead of working in the back rooms like the rest of the slave girls. A naked, gyrating human brings them in the door, and by the time they have a few drinks in them, they no longer care that I'm the only human here and they can't buy a few hours with me. So, dancing's not so bad. The chain on my leg is for my own protection, so no one can carry me off while Abuar is distracted. That's happened before, hence the chain. I'm too valuable to lose, and I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Probably good, because no one that steals me ever has pure thoughts in mind. Bad, because it means I'm stuck here forever, dancing in this shithole of a station, aliens of a dozen different worlds leering at my naked, shaking ass. At least I get a window. I press my palms to the glass and shake my hips, and as I stare out the window at the crowds, I see a familiar face. The robot guy. The cyborg. He's watching me again. A shiver runs through my body, and I swing my hips with a little more enthusiasm. He always seems to come out of his shop at least once a day and watches me for a few minutes. He never comes into the cantina, never talks to me. Just stares from afar. It happens every day, just like I'm in this window every day. And because he's a regular occurrence, he features in my fantasies. Sure, he's scary looking. He's inhuman, and the metal parts woven all through his body don't help that particular aspect. But he's big and strong, and he never shows up at the cantina to drink and paw at me, so sometimes I fantasize about him. I dream that he's going to be so taken with lust for me that he shows up and demands to buy me, that he's gentle and kind, despite the brooding, terrifying exterior, and he bridle carries me out of the cantina and into a new life. It helps to have a healthy imagination, I tell myself. It's the only way I stay sane in this garbage dump that is my existence. So I press my nipples to the glass, letting them beat up against it as I sway, my eyes on the man with the silver jaw in the distance. "Come and save me," I tell him. "Come and take me away from all this." He never does, though. And after a few minutes, he disappears back into his shop, and my fantasy fades. With a sigh, I turn back toward the cantina, run my hands down my body, and give a little smile to the gathered customers at the edge of the stage. Just another day. My feet hurt by the time the cantina closes for the night. They always do. It's 12 hours of standing on the stage with only a break long enough to eat and drink something, to take a quick pee, and then I'm back in the window, listening to shitty alien music and dreaming about getting away from this place. No shoes, of course, since that'd ruin the whole naked dancing girl look. And so I grimace when the bartender arrives with the key to unlock my cuffs.
"Long day?"
Chayla asks, giving me a weary look. She's an Uli, a frog-like squat race that isn't exactly prized for their beauty. I'm surprised she's one of Abuar's slaves, but she mixes a mean drink, and she's utterly loyal, so I guess that answers it. I shrug as she unlocks me and holds a hand out so I can hop down off the stage. They're all long.
"Well, this one's about to get longer," Chayla says in a no-nonsense voice.
Immediately, I freeze. She holds a blanket out to me, knowing that I get cold when I stop dancing and the sweat dries on my skin. I don't take it. Instead, I have a bad feeling. Am I going back to the rooms? If so, it's my worst nightmare. I hated the time I spent back there, giving customers a different kind of service. Hated how dirty I felt afterward, how they groped me and touched me in places that weren't theirs to touch. That's why I never complain about dancing, because it beats whoring. I'd much rather shake my ass in a window all day long. I'm the lucky one. I know I won't always be so lucky. I know that the day I get too old-looking or my tits drop, then I'm fucked. No one wants an elderly dancing girl, and I'm creeping up on 30. I lie and tell everyone that I'm 26, but Abuar will figure it out when he does the math in his head. Right now, as long as I look good, I'm alive, and I'm in the window. But Chayla shakes her head.
"It's not that. Abuar wants to have a meeting with the staff."
Her mouth flattens.
"Tonight."
"Oh." I take the blanket from her after all and drape it around my shoulders. "A meeting right now?" "Really? But we're all so tired." "Not that it matters to Abuar. We're here to serve him, and he might call us staff, but we know the truth of the matter. We're all slaves." Chayla just walks toward the far end of the cantina, her short legs moving quickly around a puddle of spilled drink on the floor.
"He's in a rotten keffing mood, too. More arguments with the syndicate."
She makes a sound of disapproval in her throat.
"He's going to get us all murdered."
I bite my lip. "The syndicate? Again?" I hug the blanket tighter against my frame. The syndicate is a group that controls the running of the station. There are elected officials, but everyone knows that they're completely bought out, and you have to pay the syndicate if you want to run a business on 3N. Abuar's cheap, legendarily cheap, actually, and he hates paying the syndicate. There have been times that the syndicate worked out their discount on the girls, and I hope tonight is not one of those times. I wish he'd just pay his damned bills like every other business owner around here. But Abuar thinks he's too good for that sort of thing. As we cross through the cantina, the tables are askew and still covered in the mess of the final customers. There's mugs everywhere, half-eaten food, chairs sprawled across the flooring, and a pool of vomit at the end of the long bar. I step around all of it, hoping that this meeting doesn't take too long, because I have to help the other girls clean the place up before we can go to sleep. Then it's bedtime, and we wake up an hour before opening time, and the next day starts just like the last. Abuar is in his office, and I huddle into the back of it with the other girls. One of them hands me a protein ration, and I give her a thankful look while taking tiny bites out of it. Everyone looks tired and worried. Not a good sign.
"We're all here now," Chayla tells Abuar. "We're ready to hear your news."
Abuar growls at her, snapping his needle-like teeth. An ugly crossbreed of Masaka and Suzit, with a face only a mother could love, Abuar is a real pain in the ass to everyone but Chayla, who just puts up with his shit like a long-suffering wife.
"Don't rush me, female,"
Abuar bitches, digging through his cluttered desk. It's covered with bottles of exotic liquors and piles of credits of every type. He pushes aside a data pad and an old used shock collar and sighs heavily.
"Now I can't find it."
Chayla moves to his side and nudges a second data pad in front of him, one hanging off the corner of his desk. He glares at her and snatches it away like a child. Tapping on the screen, he glances up at us.
"You're all here? All 17 slaves?"
16. Chayla corrects him. "You sold Ibby last month when she got sick."
Abuar grunts, flicking through the data pad's information.
16, right. Well, one less to worry about. You should all know that I'm closing the cantina."
He says it so casually that I'm not sure I've heard him correctly at first. Close the cantina? It's closed right now. We have to clean it before we reopen tomorrow at the noon meal. I'm not the only one that's confused by his statement. A few of us exchange looks, and then Chayla speaks up again.
"Closed permanently?"
Abuar's thin lips curl, showing needle-pointed teeth.
"The syndicate and I could not come to an agreement on credits owed, so I'm shutting down, yes."
"Are we going to another station, then?"
a pretty Ithari asks.
"We are not going anywhere," Abuar says. "Half of you will be staying with the cantina for when it comes under new ownership. Some of you are going to be sold in a slave auction 2 days from now, because I need the credits."
I stare at his desk, piled up with credits of all kinds, and his hands, which are be-ringed and covered with jewelry. His clothing is expensive, too. The bottles and flasks all over his desk, all pricey. And yet, he's too cheap to continue to do business on Three Nebulas Station, so we're either going to be sold or be turned over to new owners?
"Who's buying the place?" I speak up, afraid of what I'm going to hear.
"A Sithri named Nehaoan."
Everyone in the room groans. We're all quite familiar with Nehaoan. Tall, thin, with jeweled eyes, the Sithri have 6 arms, and all of them are gropey. Nehaoan is the worst of the lot, too. He's all over the girls, and is even more of a penny pincher than Abuar is. Something tells me I won't be dancing in a window when Nehaoan takes over. I'm going to be in the back rooms, on my back, earning the roof over my head in the most miserable way possible. There's a hollow feeling in the pit of my stomach.
"As for who's being sold,"
Abuar flicks through the data pad and then squints at it.
"Here's the list."
He rattles off a few names, and I'm not entirely surprised that it's the younger, prettier slaves. Nor am I surprised to hear my name added in with theirs. The sick feeling in my stomach just grows. I don't know which is worse, being sold on the auction block or being left here. Either way, my life is about to grow 12 times more hellish.
2. Zakuar. The human female isn't in the window the next day. In fact, the entire cantina is dark. Not that I pay much attention to the cantina. I don't drink, and I don't buy my companionship. There's not enough credits to make a female smile when she looks at me, or to make her pleased with my appearance, so I don't bother. But the female that dances in the window, the one that watches me as much as I watch her, isn't there, and that I notice. I go about my work for the rest of the day, trying not to think about why she might not be there, casting me sly looks with her eyes even as she presses her breasts to the glass and gives me sultry looks. I know it's all part of her act. I know to her I'm just another strange-looking alien beast, but I'm still fascinated by her. Of all the females that pass through the bowels of three nebulas, she never looks at me with horror or revulsion. She doesn't look at me in disgust. She doesn't stare too long at the metal covering my face with a look of pity. She just watches me as she dances. And sometimes it feels like she dances just for me when she's in that window. Foolishness. I know what I look like. I know just how much of my body has been replaced or modified. Quite a lot of it my own doing. It's good business to show off what I can do, even if I terrify small children and half the adults that come through the station. I resigned myself to that long ago. But a male still has needs, still has wants, and the human that dances naked at the cantina? She's the one I stroke myself to. She's the one I think about when I take myself in hand in the shower for a quick release. I'll never touch her, but it doesn't mean I can't fuel my fantasies. Funny enough, it isn't her teats or glorious ass that make me hunger the most. Those are perfection, but I think about her eyes the most. I think about how she alternates between a playful flirtiness as she watches me through the window, and I think about how, sometimes, she just looks so keffing sad. As if the universe has disappointed her time and time again. Probably has, considering she's a slave. Maybe it's the Masaka in me, but sometimes I'm desperate to take that sadness from her eyes. I want to see a real smile from her. Not flirting, not teasing, not part of her show. Just a genuine, broad smile that reaches her eyes. I doubt I ever will. Even so, thinking about the female makes me head to the front of my shop. It's quiet right now. I'm waiting on a shipment of prosthetics that have been stolen from a military base, and my contact is taking a little longer to show up. Until he brings me the goods, I can't contact my clients and let them know that I'm ready to work on them. My shop looks like it's a run-down repair hub, but in reality, I let my partner handle the front end. My business is far more specialized. And dangerous. Tikasa gives me a curious look as I head to the front. I lean in the doorway, pretending to be bored and scanning the crowd on three nebulas. The station is crowded. The station is always crowded, but today it seems to lack life. There's a listless energy to things, and even the people that walk past move lethargically, gazing at the clustered rows of shops and booths set up in every spare bit of flooring available. I glance over at the cantina again, but the lights are out, the window empty of a sad-eyed human female. With a grunt, I pace back into the shop. "You all right?" Tikasa asks. His nimble fingers, all of them prosthetic, rewire the back of a fancy data pad that he probably got for cheap. "Why wouldn't I be?" I grumble.
"You're pacing."
He's young, Tikusa, but astute. That's why I hired him. The boy finishes his work on the data pad and then snaps the backing into place. He wipes the screen down carefully and then places it into a box before moving on to the next broken data pad. He glances over at me as he works.
Something bothering you?
I run my hand over my metal skull cap. It feels cool and smooth against my skin, a reminder at how unnatural I look to those around me. I should have a full, thick head of black Masaka hair, proud, arching horns, capped, and decorated with the finest of metals. Instead, I'm as cratered and barren as the nearest moon. I rub my hand over the dome of my metal skull again, moving behind the counter. Just restless. I don't know. Something's off in the station today. Beside me, Tikusa snorts, not looking up from his work.
It's because everyone's sober. They're not used to it.
He gets out a small blade and pries the back off of the new data pad, intent on his work.
You heard about the cantina, right?
I hate that my pulse spikes, that I think of the nubile human female and her expressive eyes. How I swear she looks at me when she dances sometimes. What about the cantina? Tikosa's mouth curves in a half-smile as he shrugs.
Abuar's finally getting what's coming to him. You know he hasn't paid the syndicate in months? It's only because he's the only cantina with whores that he's able to get away with so much. All that's changing, though.
I watch him through narrowed eyes.
What do you mean? Heard a rumor that the syndicate told him, not so nicely, that he has 2 days to get out of here. He's closed up shop and sold the place to Nao and on the cheap.
I grunt. I'm not entirely surprised that Abuar ran afoul of the real power on this station. He had a business partner that handled a lot of the financial work for him while he fooled around with his slaves and pretended to be a big deal. That partner died last year, though, and ever since, it's been a matter of time, in my opinion. Still, I hope the new master is kind to the slave with the pretty eyes. She's up in that window all day long, and by the end of the day, she looks exhausted and worn. Who's Naheoan?
Some equally cheap bastard? Sithiri?
Ugh, not my favorite. Too many have tried to ease out of paying me, thinking they can rip me off. It's a cultural thing for the Sithiri to rip off non-Sithiri. Brings them honor or some such. Something tells me he's not going to last long as a cantina owner, though. Poor human's gonna have to change hands again, I imagine. The slaves are probably ready for a new owner.
Those that stay.
For a moment, my gut goes cold. Stay. He nods, frowning at a particularly tricky bit of wire. Hasn't looked at me once this entire conversation, Tikusa. He's utterly focused on his task, and yet he'd be able to recite every word we've said here. He's clever, and in a few years, I aim to make him my apprentice. Right now, though, I'm not pleased with his work. I want to knock the keffing data pad out of his hands and get him to spit out what he's learned.
Yeah, you know Abuar. He's gonna leave the ugly ones with the cantina and sell the pretty slaves before the new owner shows up. Heard he's already been trying to set something up with the flesh peddlers for tonight.
Flesh peddlers. He's selling his pretty slaves. The human's his most valuable slave, the one he uses to entice everyone into his cantina. I've thought about going there a few times myself, plunking down enough credits on the bar to get an hour of her time and to relieve myself of this incessant itch in my system when it comes to her, but I never have. I never wanted to see her look at me in horror or disgust. She deserves better than a quick sale, though. Knowing Abuar, he's going to sell her for fast credits, not good credits, and her new master most likely won't be kind. He won't take care of her, like I would. I run my hand over my metal-plated skull again. Kef me. Why am I even thinking about the female? Why do I care? I've never needed female companionship before. My hand has always sufficed. Matings and flirting are for males that look normal, not half-metal monsters like myself. The female would be horrified if she had to service me in bed. Unless I can give her a reason to be eager. Dangle a prize that will make her pretend to be a willing bed partner. Where's the auction gonna be held? I asked Tikosa. Which stall?
3. Tessa. I shiver, despite the humidity in the station. The purifying air filters can't work fast enough to keep the place cool, and it always gets a little steamy until they kick into high gear. You get used to it, and most of my clothing is skimpy and thin. Not that I got to keep any of that clothing. It was all left back at the cantina, because a slave isn't supposed to show up with a pack of belongings on their new master's doorstep. They show up naked, a blank slate. So I'm shivering, not because of cold, but because of fear. I'm going to be sold to a stranger, again. The collar on my throat isn't unfamiliar. It's a shock collar, loosely chained to the 4 other women that Abuar's selling. Or at least he's trying to sell. Right now, he's in an argument with the nearest slaver, dithering over his percentage of the sales. Doesn't matter who's selling us, though. One booth isn't any better than another. There's no one decent on 3 Nebula's station. At least, no one that would buy a slave. I think of the metal-jawed man with the shop across from the cantina, the one that watched me. He wouldn't buy a slave. He's probably disgusted by all the immoral things that go down in the cantina. I know he's never stepped inside. He'd probably be cruel anyhow, and my fantasies are just that, fantasies. Still, when you've got nothing to cling to, even a fantasy of a metal-jawed man with a somewhat kind heart seems like a fairy tale. Right now, I'd give anything to be in that stupid window, dancing until my aching feet fall off. It's a familiar life. I know what to expect day in and day out, and even if it's not a good life, it could be worse. Right now, I'm living worse. Next to me, Jemiah weeps quietly, wiping at her eyes. She's pretty enough, with silken golden fur all over her body and big blue eyes that entice the customers. She's the most popular girl in the cantina for that reason, and I know she feels as betrayed and hurt as I do right now. I want to comfort her, but there's no point. If I tell her everything will be all right, I'm just lying. Sometimes it feels like nothing will ever be all right again. Abuar throws up his hands in disgust.
20%? For doing what?
For putting my name on the certificate,
the flesh peddler says, stroking the thin, wiry beard on his jaw. I don't know what he is, race-wise. Something porcine, judging by his short nose and blubbery skin. I try not to think about being bought by someone like him because I can't control it. All I can do is survive until the next trauma comes up. The slave master smiles at Abuar in a way that tells me he has the upper hand.
For showing your wares to my good customers on such short notice.
Short notice? How long does this sort of thing take?
Abuar protests.
They're just slaves. Sell them and be done with it.
He makes it sound like we're not people. More like a CD player he's taken to the nearest pawn shop. It's disgusting. And not surprising. After so many years of this, nothing surprises me anymore.
Short notice, the slave master agrees. Slaves must be given a clean bill of health. They must be inspected and their personalities documented. I must ensure that my customers are buying the goods I promise. They must be cleaned up. All these things take many days, maybe weeks. But for 20%, I can overlook such things.
Abuar looks back at us, thinking. For a moment...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?